What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome to 2020, everybody. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson. Munson for short, Productions. Although, Derek, it appears that at the watch party yesterday for the Winter Classic that our audience had questions about who was hosting yesterday, emceeing. Was it Marquise or was it, in fact, Keese? So that is how good our audience is they knew to ask, which one are you? Who are you today, Mr. Munson? Are you Munson? Are you Marquise? Or are you Keese? Well, and it sounds like it was Keese that was hosting yesterday.
Well, let me take a shot out of this Pink Whitney sculpture that's right here, and I'll tell you, give you confirmation on who I am today.
Happy New Year, everybody. I hope everybody's 2020 is going to be outstanding and fantastic and amazing and all that good stuff, and better than the Preds' third period yesterday in the Winter Classic. So we'll get to you, Corey Perry. And we'll get to the score, and we'll get to the standings, and we'll get to all the other stuff that goes in on this as far as the negative side of it, because there is a negative side of it. But let's just stay positive, Derek, because it is 2020. It's a new year. So let's start the new year with a little bit of positivity, and that is that the event itself was spectacular. The second largest crowd in the history of an NHL game, 85,630 people for a hockey game at a football stadium in Dallas. Two southern markets represented for the first time in this event. The sweaters, the new individual logos were great. Everything looked great. The weather worked out very well. It got cooler as the game went along. I thought, first of all, congratulations and thank you to everyone from 102.5 The Game, who was out there doing fantastic work, whether it's Pete and Hal on the call versus Chase and Darren and Willie, his ringside reporter, all the people that went out there, Ryan Porth, everybody that Gina from promotions that went out there and did so much work to make our coverage as good as possible and the best in the business. I thought it was a great event. I thought it looked great on TV. The crowd looked amazing. The Preds fans were loud. I just think, before we get into all the negatives, I just thought it was a fantastic event and moment for Nashville Predators fans, for the NHL in the South, and for hockey in general.
I think they put on a good show. A bunch of people showed up, a lot of noise. It was everything that I think the NHL wanted it to be. They got a, for the most part, got a good game between the two teams. There's nothing more you could have asked of the crowd, of I'm sure the festivities around the game the day prior was well put together. I'm pretty sure the city of Dallas was a gracious host to the Nashville Predators and their fans, and you know, those that possibly made the trip, there were Dallas Stars fans that didn't live, in the Texas area. It's one of those events that, you put on in any sport. It's something that you put on that's not quite the norm, and you try to make it as fun and exciting and memorable as you possibly can. And I'm pretty sure, from the pictures I saw of people that went, they enjoyed it. So
it looked like a crazy atmosphere. They showed, and one of the moments, unfortunately, one of the moments was that I noticed the crowd the most was the Radulov goal, which eventually in the third period actually gave them the lead 3-2. Mm-hmm. But they kind of had this wide angle shot where they panned back from him, mm-hmm. and showed the whole crowd. And obviously there's a lot of Stars fans there because it's in Dallas, obviously. But they panned back, and to see a camera at a hockey event pan out and sort of see the three little guys celebrating, mm-hmm. and as it continues to pan out, they get smaller and smaller and smaller. All of a sudden, this football stadium comes into focus, and they're all going crazy because Dallas just scored. Obviously, mm-hmm. not what the Predators fans want to see, but just as a neutral observer watching the event, you have to step back and go, man, that's pretty cool. That was a pretty cool thing, even if it is during, while the other team is scoring a goal. Mm-hmm. I noticed myself going, oh, whoa, That gave it good scope, I thought. The TV broadcast, I think, did a good job of talking about it. And I think Doc Emmerich, who's one of the, I think you could argue, the best play-by-play guy in the industry, in any business, in any sport, he started off the entire broadcast yesterday by saying, essentially, you know, these two franchises south of the Mason-Dixon line, that's an antiquated old thing that people, like, he basically took a shot at all the people that think that hockey should be a traditional northeastern Canadian city sport, right? He basically said, no, guys, that's behind us now. That hockey can be played anywhere, and fans are great everywhere. And I think that was his point. So even then, you had the great Doc Emmerich saying something about how, hey, people need to shut up about this southern hockey stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't even understand why it's a conversation now.
Right, exactly.
You know, the southern teams that have either won a Stanley Cup, been in a Stanley Cup. I mean, so they've debunked all of that.
Yep.
You know, so.
And the fans, I think.
Absolutely. And the fans have, the fans have bought into hockey in the South, or in non-traditional areas. They bought into it. If you have a good team, they'll come out and support you. So.
Well, Tim's on the line early here today. I have not. We will get to Corey Perry because I've got things to say to Corey Perry. And obviously the loss was a 4-point swing in the central standings, and there's negatives to be had in this situation. I just didn't want to start that way. You know, it's a new year, Derek. I wanted to, like, you know, start positive. Yeah,
because
like, it was a great event. It was a great event. I tried to tell y'all before the game, don't worry. Like, I'm not stressed about the outcome because I don't want to be stressed about the event. I want the event to be fantastic, and it was, and you can appreciate it for what it was, and then also separate the fact that there's a major injury and – to, you know, a 4-point swing in the standings, which we can get to. So, Tim, I hope you're going positive here, Tim. Okay? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Sorry. But, great event, obviously. I think it was cool that Nashville got invited, and I think it just sucks that, again, in a national spotlight, we have to worry about what the hell is wrong with this team. And I've never mentioned the words fire Laviolette. I've never been that kind of guy. But I just don't know what else can be done to get a team full of really good players that have won a President's Trophy and two divisions back-to-back to just play good. Like, why can't they just play good hockey? Like, it doesn't make sense, and I'm kind of sick of it. So sorry for getting on here and bursting
early,
but I've been waiting all day since yesterday to vent, and you guys are the first ones I've had a chance to vent to. So,
well, and thank you for choosing us, Tim. We do appreciate that. And listen, he's not wrong. I do love the simplicity of the argument. Why aren't they playing good hockey?
Hey, it's plain and simple. Why aren't they playing good hockey?
Yeah, he's not analyzing the breakout or the penalty kill or the goaltending or the high danger chances or the defensive scheme. He's just saying they're not playing good hockey, guys.
No, they're not.
I think Tim, there's a lot of people that probably feel like Tim.
There's a lot of people that want to call in and ask the same questions that Tim asked. You know, why are they not playing good hockey? And, you know, that game was just a microcosm of where they are as a team. They play well and take advantage of some situations, and then they just blow it all. In the end, or it's just an inconsistent hockey. Well, that's the theme of this season, the inconsistent hockey of the Nashville Predators. So, you know, I mean, that game fits their season right about now.
I could not have said it better. We will expand on that. You'll hear from Matt Duchene about the loss and what does it mean, Roman Josi as well. You'll hear from him after the loss yesterday because, again, not only is it a 4-point swing in the standings, you are now tied for last with Chicago in the Central Division. You've also got 5 of your next 6 on the road. So if you want to chime in, the text line is open, 615-737-1025, as well as the phone number if you want to chime in on that. However, we've got to get to what happened in the first couple of minutes of the game, and I already have a very large disagreement with one particular individual. You guys all know who that is. We will explain, and I'm not even going to try to be nice next segment. I was just nice this segment. I was very nice. I was trying to be positive. Next segment will not be positive. Not for everybody. We'll get to that when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Under 3 minutes into a scoreless game. Look out. What is going to happen there? This is disgusting. I'm telling you, when I saw this hit live when it happened, Corey Perry got his elbow up against Ryan Ellis, really for no reason. Ellis would need help going to the locker room. He would not return. Take another look. That is an intent to injure, in my opinion. Perry gets a five-minute major, a game misconduct for elbowing. He's a goner, and it didn't take long for him not to enjoy the Outdoor Classic.
Hey, when Elko says it, you listen, all right? That's the bottom line. Corey Perry, of course, just the second shift for Ryan Ellis, goes high. Ryan Ellis takes an elbow right to the face, is essentially down at the blue line. It did not even happen in the dirty area. It happened out in space where there is no excuse for Corey Perry. Welcome back, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall. Preds fall 4-2 yesterday in the Winter Classic. They do give up, I want to say it was four goals in about 9 minutes, 8 minutes, spanning the end of the second period and the beginning of the third period, and it just sort of fell apart for them, which, again, as you just mentioned, Derek, is sort of the story of the season. But they do score two power play goals in the first period. Everybody feels great. Duchesne and Fabbro backdoor goals on both of them off the five-minute major that, of course, Corey Perry picked up. Ryan Ellis does not play more than a minute and some change because he was hit right in the face by an elbow from probably one of the dirtiest players in the NHL. He's the only player to be kicked out of a Winter Classic. Predators fans gave it to him as he was leaving. And Linda Cohn, I think, said it. I don't know how you don't see intent to injure. Corey Perry's comments, quote, "I've played with Ryan before. I know him personally. It's very unintentional. I didn't mean to hurt him. I hope he's okay." Derek, can those things be true, that he didn't mean to hurt him, that he hopes he's okay, but that it actually was still a dirty play? Like, is it even possible that both things are true?
If he says he knows him personally, so obviously there's some type of friendship there. I think it can be. It was a dirty hit, an unnecessary hit. Maybe it was one of those hits where, you know, you're not coming in with full force, but you sort of want to kind of get a little cheap shot in, and you know, and but when you go to the head, whether it's, you know, intentional or unintentional or with force or not force, you know, the consequences are the consequences. And it doesn't matter how hard you hit him. If you hit him in the head a lot of times, that's going to knock a guy down. That's going to daze a guy. That's going to put a guy in a position where he's vulnerable. So, you know, there's no dispute that it was an unnecessary hit. It was a dirty hit. He shouldn't have done it.
Right.
Now, whether his intentions were to, you know, knock him out of the game, I don't think his intentions were to knock him out of the game, but maybe, you know, just kind of, you know, show him he was there and, you know, sting him a little bit. But, you know, you just don't do that. I mean, there's no place for it, you know, and you know, it's just, this is what happens when, you know, you do things outside of the scope of the rules. Had he went down and not left the game, then, you know, you would have got your five minute penalty and maybe still kicked out of the game, but they would have still had Ellis. But you don't know what's going to happen when you hit a guy in the head. So the NHL was right by throwing him out of the game. Listen, the comments by the Predators players, I probably would have made the same comments too if that was done to a player of mine. So, you know, I don't blame the guys saying what they said, and you knew he was going to be supported by his teammates and coaches, meaning Perry. But this is a history of Corey Perry, and even when you have a history like this,
there you go.
Even if you didn't intend on doing it that way, people are still going to look at it as you're a dirty player.
Yeah, and listen, I think he's just, if he wasn't already the top villain in Predators history, he's probably, now he's cemented himself.
It's the Vontaze Burfitt effect.
Exactly.
No matter what you do, you're going to always, if someone else, if another player were to do the same play, they wouldn't be looked at as a dirty player. They'll say, yeah, it's a dirty hit, but not a dirty player. But when it's that person that's consistently doing it, you're just a dirty player.
Yeah, nobody likes you, dude. That's the line from Ryan Johansson, I believe. Remember that back in the playoffs? Hey, nobody likes you, man. now, listen, they had a lot of players on those Ducks teams. Getzlaff and a few others. You know, Ryan Kesler, but he also goes back to the Vancouver days when they played against Vancouver and lost the series, and he was great in that series. You know, Kessler's a physical, hard-nosed player, but none of them are like Corey Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Perry's just viewed that way. And listen, more importantly for the Preds, as they lose a game to the Stars 4-2, you had Roman Josi having to pick up the slack, 33 minutes of ice time yesterday, not only because it's the Winter Classic, but because they played with five defensemen, because Ellis played a minute and 16 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And now we'll find out, you know, listen, he obviously was knocked pretty hard in the head. So we all know what the injury is. We all know what it is. I love the Predators' upper body injury. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we saw what happened. And when an elbow pad full speed goes into a guy's jawline and cheekbone, we know where the injury is. So I think if he wasn't, you know, villain number one for Predators fans before yesterday, he probably was. If he wasn't, it certainly has been cemented now, because how long are the Predators going to be without their second leading scorer? That's what Ryan Ellis is right now. 28 points, their second leading scorer. They cannot afford to be without people like that. And absolutely a terrible, terrible hit. And I think the NHL right to kick him out. I'd like to see a penalty enforced as well, whether it's a fine or a suspension. I imagine that's coming since he got the game misconduct. Corey wants to chime in. Corey, what's up?
Hey, guys. I mean, nobody ever wants to see anybody get hurt like this or this kind of thing happen, but this could be a very galvanizing thing for the Predators. It has been for their teams in the past, where the next time they play the Ducks, you know, somebody like Austin Watson or somebody just takes Corey Perry to the cleaners and just beats the living tar out of him. And it just becomes a rallying cry for the rest of the team, and they come together and they go on a huge run. It very well could be a very good thing going forward, as far as, you know, a rallying cry and a banner to kind of get this team to come together and play with a little bit different intensity.
I think it's a good point, Corey. I think you always see, and Derek, you can speak to this from a football standpoint. You know, didn't Joe Burrow get lit up on the sidelines? Was it against Auburn where he was running to the sidelines and he got lit up and he popped right back up again and he looked at everybody like, "Y'all, I'm still here, dog. What's up?" And LSU,
he said he was feeling it though.
And LSU, but he didn't show it, right? And LSU,
exactly.
And LSU people, his teammates rallied around that, and there's a lot of people that I think that the story coming out of that game was that's why they played the way they did, is they saw their quarterback get tattooed, and he popped right back up again, and we went to battle for him. So I think there's something to that. And you did score two power play goals on the ensuing penalty. The problem is the four goals you allowed in 8 minutes, about 25 minutes later, about 40 minutes later, when you gave up four goals just like that, bang, 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 bang. And, you know, so maybe it galvanized you early. We'll find out. We've got to let games play out. It's still not even the halfway mark of the season yet, so we'll see. Wayne wants to chime in here. Wayne, what's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm not going to speak on Corey Perry because this is a family show. I'm just going to say that he should get 2 games for the hit, 3 games for the blatancy of the hit because it was his first shift, I believe, and another 3 games for embarrassing the NHL on the biggest regular season stage. How do you get thrown out in the first 3 minutes?
Yeah, and he's the only player ever kicked out of a Winter Classic.
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, it's... There's part of me that when I saw it, I was just like, of course that's what happened. Of course, Corey Perry in the sort of the biggest national moment, not of his career, he's played in big games, but of course he did this. Of course he knocked a Predators player out in the middle of the ice where there's no one else around you, where it's very clearly just you and a guy, and you just knocked him the bleep out. Like, of course that's what happened. And of course he's the only guy kicked out of the Winter Classic. Like,
how fitting.
Like, it just right. It made sense. Now, unfortunately, what this all means, and again to the caller's point about galvanizing the team, sure that may happen. If Ellis is out for an extended period of time and they get a chance to sort of think on this particular play and this hit and this player, maybe it does galvanize the locker room a little bit. Right now, Predators fans are willing to take anything. Because the system isn't working, the players aren't working, the coaching staff's not working, none of it's working, because they're tied for last in the division, in the Central Division. And you can say whatever you want about the talent, you can say whatever you want about, you know, it's generally the goaltending, and you can't fix goaltending, you just got to let them work their way out of it. I get all of that. But at the end of the day, you are what you are. And right now, you're tied for last place with Chicago in the basement of the Central Division. And unless you fix something, and now you're going to play five out of six on the road against really good hockey teams. Your one home game is against Boston, who's great. Mm-hmm. Y'all got an uphill climb in the next month here, and you're facing every team in the standings above you. And so they've dug themselves a pretty deep hole here nearing the halfway mark, Derek, where they're going to have to play almost near perfect hockey in the second half to get to 90, 95 points and make the playoffs.
This is how I look at it. Talent plus no production equals a waste. That's what it is. Talent plus no production equals a waste. And that's what is happening to the Nashville Predators right now. They have all the talent, but they're not producing wins at a consistent base on a consistent basis. So they're wasting this talent and they're wasting this season away. That's what they're doing. This is a bad team. Call it how it is. It's a bad team. If anybody else was playing like this, we would call them a bad team. And there's no reason for this to be a bad, wasted team because, again, you have too much talent. Potential and talent is the worst. I mean, it's the scariest word in sports because you have all this potential and talent, but you don't do anything with it. And it's unfortunate they haven't been able to do anything with it this year because they have in recent years. And you just try to figure out what is different this year. What is different this year? You know, they upgraded their offense. Is it that they upgraded their offense and put a strain on their defense? What is it? Yeah. It's just, you know, it's, are you holding on too long to a goalie that is starting to go downhill and go downhill very quickly? What is it? I don't know what it is. Maybe they don't even know what it is. Yeah. But I know what we're seeing on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing a good team. We're seeing a team waste away talent and potential to be one of the better teams in the National Hockey League. That's what we're seeing. Call it how it is. Don't make no people that are making excuses for this team. Y'all need to go sit down somewhere.
I don't think there's a lot of Preds fans right now making excuses.
I think Preds
fans are getting pretty fed up with it.
It's unfortunate. I don't think anyone saw this season going the way it has. Now again,
especially not after the start.
They can turn it around and put themselves in the playoffs.
Plenty of time.
And go on the road. I get that. But nothing tells me that that's going to happen. Nothing says that. Because the minute you think that they are turning a corner, they go on a 2 or 3 game losing streak.
The only argument you make is, I'm just going to believe in them because there's a lot of time left. That's the only argument you can make
now. So, I guess that's what you can say.
And that's based on a whole lot of nothing. That's what that argument's all about. All right, I told you guys you'll hear from Roman Josi and Matt Duchene. I lied to you. We got upset about Corey Perry. I should have expected that. So we'll hear from Josi and Matt Duchene when we come back. Also, Tennessee tonight in the final game of the year. For the Tennessee Volunteers, they'll play Indiana, of course, down there in the Gator Bowl. Should be a lot of fun, the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. So we'll do that as well when we come back. So a lot to do here on a Thursday. I ask my body what day it is. I have no clue. It feels like a Saturday or a Monday or a Friday. I have no idea. I think it's Thursday. So we'll hear from Josi and Duchene and talk Vols when we come back right here, Morning Drive.
Roman, why do you think it's harder to stop the bleeding when bad things start to happen for you guys?
Well, I think after the second one, they had a push, and I mean, it's going to happen. That's a really good team over there. So we just got to stay to our plan, and we can't. If they have one good shift, we got to have a good shift. After that, you can't let it happen over and over again, and you somehow got to stop it, and it's up to us to do that and go out there and just have a shift after they have a push.
Roman Josi there on the Predators 4-2 loss in the Winter Classic yesterday. Great, great event. You can separate that from the fact that this team did exactly what this team has done for what feels like the entire season, which is play inconsistent hockey from one period to the next. Special teams making mistakes and an unfortunate injury, of course, with Ryan Ellis getting elbowed in the head by Corey Perry. Very, very dirty hit, kicked out of the game. A couple of people chiming in on the text line. We'll hear from Matt Duchene in just a second. This is Kyle, I believe. I'll support this team with all my heart, but I have no faith in them to pull this out unless a drastic change is made. And I don't know what that means. Obviously, the coaching staff is in play, but I'm not there yet. I'm not even close to that yet. But I don't know what David Poyle's plans are for the trade deadline. A good GM is constantly looking at making adjustments and moving people around. Caleb on the text line again, 615-737-1025. Honestly, I'm worried. I don't know if it's the back and forth between goaltending that's making things inconsistent or something else, but I do know they're not playing their best hockey right now, and as a diehard fan, it hurts. It really does. Thanks. Sounds like Caleb needed like some cathartic there. That was like a cathartic text message. He felt better after he sent sent that message. So there's a couple of text chime-ins there from the audience.
Chiming in.
I'm still in holiday mode. Again, my brain feels like a Tuesday. Maybe it's a Monday. Is it a Friday? I don't know. Is tomorrow Saturday? I'm not sure. Here was Matt Duchene after the game yesterday. Listen carefully to what the newly acquired center has to say.
We stopped going after. We got two goals, and we sat back a little bit, maybe trying to, you know, just prevent more than attack. And what made us good in the first, we attacked, and we hemmed them in, and the ice was bad, so it's tough to break pucks out under pressure for the D and the forwards. And you saw us do it to them in the first, and then they did it to us in the second. And then I thought the third was 50-50, but, I mean, we didn't start doing it till it was 4-2. So it's disappointing, but at the end of the day, whether we lost at home or we lost here, we lost in, you know, at American Airlines, it's the same thing on in the standings. So we can't bury ourselves here. We got to stay positive and keep pushing. We got games in hand on a lot of teams, and we got some ground to make up, but we got over half a season to do it. So
Matt Duchene there on the game yesterday, and the comment that stood out to me is we sat back and we're not aggressive and didn't hem them in, essentially. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's the concern is why does that happen all the time? And is that the players? Is that the coaching staff? The answer is probably yes. The answer is everybody. But when you're not getting great goaltending and you're sitting back and you're not being aggressive, you know, you're going to get beat and you're going to give up goals. And that's what happened yesterday. Stars win.
Why were you sitting back? Why were you not aggressive? Because you were up 2-0. Dallas is a good team. They're struggling, but they're a good team. They have a damn good goalie. They have good players. Why do you feel the need to sit back and not be aggressive? That right there, because, you know, as this thing continues to go on, you know, we're going to start, you know, our eyes are going to continue to get laser focused on the head coach and, you know, picking out the problems, or is, you know, we're going to have everything to say about the head coach. But when a player says something like this, that has nothing to do with the head coach. Why are you sitting back? Why are you not aggressive? I know the head coach didn't say, hey, stop. We're up 2-0. Hey, fellas, don't be aggressive. Sit back. Sit back. Don't worry about it. We got this. Pecorino is playing at a Vezina level. Not. He didn't say that. So, again, this is I don't know where why is this the thing? I don't get it.
I know.
There's no.
It's hard to find the words, man.
Yeah, there's no. Maybe, you know what? Maybe losing. Maybe they need the attitude of a PK Subban on their team. Maybe they do. You know,
I didn't say that.
Maybe they do. I don't know. You know, maybe they need that attitude on their team.
They need something.
You know, because right now everybody's just humbugging it around. There's no, he said it. We were not aggressive. Well, how can you not be aggressive in an aggressive sport?
This is like LaJuan.
I don't get it.
This is like LaJuan telling us over and over again that he's got to fix the mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, I know I took the penalties. I know, guys. I know you don't have to ask me. I know I took the penalties. It's my bad. How many times can you say that until we just go, dude, I don't care anymore?
Just fix it.
I don't care anymore.
Until
stop,
we see you fix
stop
it.
Stop telling me about it. Go do it. And so I'm with you. The consistency thing is the issue. And whether it's goal. I mean, goaltending is obviously a huge part of this. Mm-hmm. And that's not on the coaching staff. That's on the goaltenders. And you can't really make changes, right? You're not getting rid of Pecorino or UC Saros. Mm-hmm. Those are your guys. You're riding with them. And so, you know, if that's going to be what brings this team down, then maybe it's not any more complicated than, hey, they got bad goaltending this year. We know those guys are better than their numbers this year. It's not just the defense, it's the goaltending. And maybe that's the issue, and that's all it is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like that's all the issue it is. It feels like there's more to it than that. And it feels like all these players are better when they're somewhere else, and then they come here and their numbers go down. Mm-hmm. You know, like inconsistency, you know, is the message stale? Is the goaltending bad? We've got all kinds of questions here. The bottom line is you're in last place in the Central Division standings. And unless you do something quickly about it, again, St. Louis was in last place in January of last year and won a cup. So I don't think it's not panic mode yet. It's just close to panic mode. That's all. UT plays tonight, Tennessee Volunteers, against the Indiana Hoosiers. Now, I've got my standard operating procedure when it comes to bowl games and when it comes to outcomes of bowl games and how way too many people put way too much stock into what happens in bowl games. Mm-hmm. How should Tennessee Volunteers fans watch this game tonight? How should they value what takes place tonight, if anything at all? I'll give you my thoughts. We'll explain when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall on a Thursday in 2020 here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Preds fall 4-2 in the Winter Classic, but man, what is it, a spectacular event. It really was, outside of the outcome and losing one of your star players and all the same issues cropping up. Well, yeah, all outside of all that, great, great event yesterday in front of the second largest crowd in NHL history of course, 85,630 people at the Cotton Bowl. And great work by our team. Really proud of the work that our guys did, men and women out there in Dallas, giving you the best coverage of the Winter Classic anywhere. But basically anywhere, just anywhere in the world. Tennessee Volunteers will play tonight against Indiana. They've got the primetime slot all to themselves, 7 o'clock Central Time. And it's a nice moment for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt, certainly after the way last year went and the start of the season this year. So it's a great moment for Tennessee fans to celebrate the growth of their program, and maybe it's trending in the right direction. I just have a message, and I want to see what you guys think about this. Uh-huh. My message to Tennessee fans is just don't get too worked up about tonight. Like, just don't do it. Like, if Indiana wins the game somehow, some way, it doesn't mean you're going to have a bad season next year. If you win the game tonight, it doesn't mean you're going to have a great season next year. Indiana has not won a bowl game since 1991. If they win 9 games, it'll be the greatest season in Indiana history. Mm-hmm. They probably are a little bit more motivated. I think Tennessee's the better team. But think about Tennessee in bowl games. They dominated the Big Ten in 3 straight bowl wins over Butch Jones. Mm-hmm. They crushed Iowa. And they came back and won 9 games the next year. They did take a step forward. And they beat Northwestern, crushed Northwestern. Did the win over Northwestern help Tennessee the following year? No, they were picked to win the East, and they still lost to South Carolina, and they did not take a step forward. Then they crushed Nebraska in a bowl game here at the Music City Bowl. Did that help them the next year? No, they went 0-8. You look at what Iowa did in that bowl game after Tennessee beat the tar out of them in 2014. Iowa came back the next year, and Sparty had to beat them in the Big Ten mm-hmm. championship game. They went 12-0.
Yeah.
Iowa got smoked by Tennessee in a bowl game and came back the next year and went 12-0. So I guess my point is enjoy tonight for what it is. Watch it, root for your team, have fun. Don't take it too seriously because it means absolutely nothing, the outcome, about the Tennessee Volunteer program moving forward or looking backwards. It's just a fun game that you can cheer for your team and you want to win. Am I wrong on this? Because I don't think there's any correlation to what's going to happen next year for Jeremy Pruitt and what happens tonight in a bowl game.
I don't think it has anything to do with how they come together next year as a football team. It does put a cap on a season that has been that has been, you know, a tale of two halves. You know, the first half of the season they didn't play well. And everyone was questioning whether this program was headed in the right direction, whether Pruitt was the right guy, and, you know, whether Garantano was the right guy underneath center. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you know, they change, they turn it around, and no longer are we, you know, no longer do we have those questions. But I think it would be a cap to the season. It would be a job well done. Jeremy Pruitt, job well done. 2019 Tennessee Vols.
Even
that's
if they lose, can I still say though, job well done?
Yeah, like, I think you can. I think it's to me. I think
that's my point. Like,
Yeah, you can. But to me, it's more so how the game is played. If they go out here and just lay an egg, then it would be sort of disappointing. Like, y'all had all that time, sense. And you didn't get the guys prepared. The guys were not prepared. But if they go out in there and they fight it hard and it's back and forth, even if they lose by a touchdown or a couple points, it's like, okay, if it Indiana, was a good game, right.
Like,
you know?
If Indiana kicks a field goal and wins the game.
Exactly.
Does it mean the Big Ten was better than the SEC?
No. It doesn't. It just...
Does it mean that you're going to suck next year?
No.
No, it doesn't. If Indiana happens to kick a field goal and wins the game, it doesn't mean anything for your program. I know fans want to win and not lose, and I totally get that. I'm not suggesting fans don't do that. You're totally fine with that. But I've been on this kick for years now that bowl results don't matter. The outcomes of the games don't matter. Sure, does Indiana want to win its first bowl game since 1991? Absolutely. But does it change the fact that they had a really great year this year under Tom Allen and that they were 8-4, one of the best records they've ever had in franchise history? No, it doesn't change that. Again, like he said, it would be a nice cap to a good season. But what I care about with Jeremy Pruitt is how his team responded from a 1-4 start and won 5 straight games down the stretch to get to a bowl game and go 7-5. That's what I care about
in
2019.
And that's not what happens
against some Indiana team in some exhibition game where Juwan Jennings is not playing for the half.
But see, that's the point, though, of look how our season started. And now all of a sudden, you know, we finish with a good record, 7-5, and then we end the season 8-5. So we're an 8-win team. So it's kind of helps out the psyche of, look, we could have been a better team. We could have been the team that we were at the end of the season and that bowl game. We could have been that team all year. Competitive first half against Georgia, competitive game against Alabama up until the call and, you know, the fumble. But this is the team that we have this potential. We can be this team all the time. And I think that's what, yeah, the bowl game doesn't matter if you win it or lose it, whatever. But it's just a matter of the psyche going into next season of, look, we're an 8-win team last year. I didn't win a bowl game our first year. I only won 5 games, and I went to 5-8.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, like, I'm getting this program on the right track. And that's what is going to show recruits, and it's going to show his players.
But you can,
like,
do all of that without the win, though. You can still say, look, we went from 5-7. We've shown growth. Again, I think in the moment, it is a great celebration of the game. Enjoy it. Have fun with it. But I can point to just last year. Georgia, what was one of the biggest upsets in bowl games last year? Texas over Georgia, right? Sugar Bowl. Everyone's like, oh, Georgia didn't deserve to be in the playoff. Look how bad they are. They've lost 3 times. Texas is on the right. They're on the up. Texas is back.
That's when we got the quote.
No,
we're back.
Look at this. Texas had a terrible year. They fell on their faces this year. And guess what? Georgia was top 5 all season. How about this one? Memphis last year. I'll just keep it local. Memphis last year got beat by Wake Forest in a bowl game. Mm-hmm. Beat by Wake Forest. Guess what? They came back and had the best season in school history this year. It had zero impact on the Memphis Tigers. How about Northwestern over Utah last year in a bowl game? Northwestern this year, 3-9. Utah almost made it to the playoff. So I guess my point is that the outcome of tonight, like you said, Derek, it's more about how you play. You know, if they lay a total egg and they look garbage, then yeah, that there's some concern there. But coaches call these games differently. They go for it on fourth down when they normally don't. They run fake punts. They play a lot of young players, which if I'm Tennessee, I want to see a lot of young players getting a lot of reps tonight. I don't need to see, like, yeah, I want to see Juwan Jennings because he's like a fan favorite. But what I want to see tonight is some of the young guys get a lot of reps so they get some live action and they get better through all this practice. So I don't know. Again, I rattled off the bowl results for Tennessee. Tennessee crushed Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa got embarrassed. They came back and went 12-0 the next year. And so I don't think you can attach too much to tonight. As a coach or a player or a fan, you just enjoy it for what it is, and then you get back to work. And you say, you know what? It's about National Signing Day. It's about spring practice. It's about developing young talent. I just don't want Tennessee fans to be too down or too up. Because right now everyone's like, oh, the SEC's 6-2 in bowl games are the best conference. No, they're the best conference because they were the best conference in the regular season this year, not because they won a bunch of exhibition events at the end of the year.
Yeah, but it also... I do believe it does give Jeremy Pruitt and his coaching staff a parameters that gives them some parameters. It gives them a gauge of where they are as a program, because he's going to play some of these guys that are going to be a lot of these guys that are going to be here next year.
Right.
And I know what he wants to see, because this is what I would want to see if I was a head coach. How do these guys that are going to be here next year play under this circumstance?
100%.
Against a team they're not familiar with, in a division they're not familiar with, how do they react being out of their sort of comfort zone of the SEC? That's what I want to. That's what I would want to see as a head coach. How do these guys perform? And if they perform well, then it's like, okay, we have something to work with. Plus the additions that we're going to add, you know, during recruiting, we got some things to work with headed into the offseason.
Yeah, and that, all that's accurate. And if I'm evaluating Henry Toto, for example, then I want to see what he does in this game, or maybe some of the younger players, like you said. Like, you know, how do we know if – and Nick Saban talks about this all the time – like, kids on bowl games, they're out partying. Some of them don't care as much. I hate to break it to you. Some of these guys aren't even playing. McCaffrey and Fournette and, you know, a lot of the Michigan guys 2 years ago didn't even play in these bowl games. So I think what happens is the only thing fans see of a team, because mostly fans only watch their team in their conference. The only time you see these other teams is during Christmas time in the bowl games. And so what happens is the only time you see Indiana, like how many Tennessee fans watched Indiana football this year, really?
And so, I didn't even watch Indiana football.
So the only time you're going to see Indiana is in this one weird situation when they play Tennessee, when, you know, when you're calling the game differently, coaching the game differently, playing the game differently, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. And all of a sudden, you know, Indiana wins a game or gets blown out, and we're going to go, see, look, the Big Ten sucks, Indiana sucks. And it's like, no, Indiana had a great year this year, and they deserve credit for it. You just didn't watch any of it. That's what happens, is that this is all we see, and then what happens is the hype train in the offseason gets going because of what happens in a bowl game. And that's irrational.
Well, you can also look, you know, you look no further than another Big Ten and SEC matchup. Minnesota and Auburn. You know, people that probably only saw Auburn just this one time, they're probably thinking, oh, that defense is horrible because Minnesota scored 31. But no, that defense is not horrible. No. That was one of the best defenses in the country. You just caught them in a bowl game.
LSU scored 23 points on Auburn.
And we know LSU put up points in bunches. It's just you caught a team that really, I mean, yeah, they went out there and played. They play, but it's the bowl game.
And it doesn't mean we shouldn't take, give credit to Minnesota. Like,
exactly.
You should, if you're a Minnesota fan, you celebrate. You have a great time. You say, man, that was a great win for our program. And it was. It was a great win for their program. And you use it and you say, hey, whatever. But, like, it doesn't mean they're going to do anything next year. It doesn't mean Auburn, Bo Nix is going to be terrible next year. It doesn't mean anything. I'm not trying to discount what bowl games are, but the second you have 80 teams going to bowl games and you know, 40 different, like, winners and losers, it's just not, it doesn't affect your program the way people think it does. It's just our only perception of a team, by and large, is the last thing we see. And the amount of time we have to watch bowl games during Christmas time is a lot greater. And we watch a lot of other conferences during this time of year. And it sort of clouds our judgment as to what teams are going to be in the following season.
I think they should take some of the bowl games out and make it 7 games to make the bowl game.
I actually totally agree.
Yeah.
You have to have a winning record to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, because imagine, because in the NFL we do this to where if a team's like 8-8 and they make the playoffs, they're like, oh, why is that team in the playoffs? We almost did it with the Eagles and the Cowboys of, oh, why are they in the playoffs? They don't deserve a playoff spot.
The ACC and the Big Ten have the same number of bowl wins right now. Was the ACC better, as good as the Big Ten this year?
No.
No, it's not even close.
No.
It's not even close. It's about, like, again, the SEC has the best bowl record. Mm-hmm. They're 6-2 or 7-2, whatever they are. The Big 12 is 1-6, I think, 1-5. Yes, the SEC was a better conference, but not because of these bowl games. They were a better conference because during the regular season, they had better teams all year. They were the better league. So don't use bowl results. That's lazy fandom. It's like blaming the refs for your team losing. Like, don't fall into this, oh, the Big 12 is terrible at football because they went 1-5 in bowl games. Well, maybe they didn't have good matchups. Maybe people weren't playing. It's too complicated. Tennessee Titans are on the field on Saturday night. And there's one observation I have of the general landscape of the NFL playoffs. And I'm kind of surprised at what I've seen. I'll explain when we come back. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.